away from a five-year review. So what is there anything we could do to assist if one came up that we had simply an oversight that we missed, the assisted by the board or somehow? I don't know, but I think I'm a bit nervous of giving a finite list without the ability to perhaps add on another one in some way.
I want to remind members that nothing stops the department to come with an amendment to the bill if they find such a need. But these are the indices that we are comfortable with. And I think this indices is too an important issue to leave without Parliament's input in it. You don't want a situation where suddenly you wake up and they've got a new indices. I might start one like that if I was there, on politicians or something like that. It's also making sure about the abuse of these indexes and the separation of these indexes. And if they need to, they can come back with an amendment. They don't have to wait for 5 years. The proper review of the bill will be done in 5 years' time. That's what we said. But they can still do so. I don't know if members got different opinions, please raise them, but I think this is an ethical security issue as well that Parliament should take an interest in.
I think your person, I think you're right, but I don't know where, I understand where she's coming from. But if you give that leeway, they may do the same thing as we are talking about, who kind of came off the police, and then come up with all the deputies that we don't know about. It's better that they come back to us, and then we give them the clearance. Because if we don't do that, they may come up with all sorts of things, which is going to bombard the labs. And they will never know which one they should start with.
If I'm someone who lived in a house that was where a murder took place, and I was absolutely seen elsewhere, so it couldn't have been me, obviously now my finger or my DNA needs to be taken to eliminate me as a suspect. Would this go under the crime scene index? I thought that was like a volunteer index, which we renamed, but it seems to be it would be under the elimination index, but you say it's not there. So where would that go? Where would it be listed?
Index. It's under investigative index. That's what we renamed the volunteer index, investigative index. So once they have, yours would be there for that purposes, but obviously the perpetrators will also be there originally, and then they will migrate to the suspect index or the convicted offenders index, etc., etc. Yours will get destroyed, eliminated after the court case has been concluded. Happy? Can we continue, please?
Thanks. The next is the crime scene index, 15H1. The crime scene index must contain the relevant forensic DNA profiles derived by means of DNA analysis from samples that are found and collected, including at the crime scene. A, at any place where an offence was or is reasonably suspected of having been committed, B, on or in the body of the victim or suspect, which may be used to identify DNA left by that person who was in contact with that person during the commission of the offence, or C, on anything worn or carried by the victim or suspect at the time when an offence was or is reasonably suspected of having been committed. 2. The authorized officer must ensure the safe and secure storage of crime scene samples, which samples must be kept indefinitely.
Vince, can I hear you on this section? Happy? I'm coming back. I've got to go. Continue, please.
Thank you, Jay. Arrestee index 15I. 1. The arrestee index must contain forensic DNA profiles derived by means of forensic DNA analysis from a bodily sample taken under any power conferred by Chapter 3 of the Criminal Procedure Act, where an arrestee's forensic DNA profile does not form part of any other index. 2. The forensic DNA profile in the arrestee index must be removed immediately upon application in the prescribed manner by the relevant person when AA decision was taken not to prosecute the person in circumstances where the person would be entitled to a certificate not to prosecute. B, person is discharged at a preparatory examination. C, person is acquitted at his or her trial. Or D, person's conviction is set aside on appeal or review, provided that there there is no other outstanding criminal investigation against the person. 3. The application referred to in subsection 2 must be submitted to the authorized officer and a copy thereof provided to the board. 4. The profile of a person referred to in subsection 2 may not be retained for longer than 3 years in the case of an adult or 12 months in the case of a child. Chair, that was a specific request from the committee. After the authorized officer has been notified in accordance with subsection 6 or 7. 5. If a decision was taken in a court to withdraw the charges against the person, a DNA profile may not be retained for longer than A. 3 years in the case of an adult, or B. 12 months in the case of a child. 6. The clerk of the court or registrar of High Court must notify the authorized officer of an acquittal, conviction, setting aside or finding of a preliminary investigation within 60 days from the date of the verdict or outcome of the matter. 7. In respect of a decision not to prosecute, the prosecutor who made the decision must notify the authorized officer within 60 days from the date of the decision. 8. If an application contemplated in subsection 2 is received by the authorized officer before a notification referred to in subsection 6 or 7 has been received, the authorized officer must inquire from the relevant authority in that regard. It was also a new insertion, Chair.
Member, can we go through this starting at 15I1? Any happy with what the changes are there? Okay. 2. Can we talk about Mr. George's favorite topic, reprosecute? Mr. Parliamentary Law Advisor, you want to say something. Continue, please.
Thank you, Chairperson. After the meeting on where we discussed the non-prosecutor, look at the Criminal Procedure Act to see if a non-prosecutor is issued, if it is in fact permanent. In other words, if it's permanent. And then in the Criminal Procedure Act that the issue of nullity prosecution usually comes in when it's a private prosecution, where a person wants to, and the prosecutor decided not to prosecute him, then inquire the nullity prosecution. Now, in that section, it says that the nullity prosecution issued by the prosecutor is only valid for 3 months. Then the person must institute it within 3 months. Even if the person do institute the private prosecution, the prosecutor can any time intervene. So that right, the interpretation that a nullity prosecution is not a permanent document, and the prosecutor can at any time reopen the case even though he has issued a nullity prosecution. And in light of that, I thought I must inform the committee about it so they can reconsider whether to have the nullity prosecution under the 3-year provision.
Always, thank you. We asked clearly about these questions, and Mr. George was the one that was very worried about this issue, and it seems correctly so. But none of the legal people then at the point in time can also say, no, this is the way it is. We were informed that it's final. So that impacts on this part of it, and we need to get an understanding. Commissioner Jacobs, can you enlighten us? State law advisors.
Yeah, I think if one look at the Mopper case, it talks about when there is a decision not to prosecute. So I think if that decision is made not to prosecute, whatever you would call it, I think the person would in any event be entitled to have the DNA removed, as is the case with the fingerprints as well. As a matter of fact, it was a provision in the Criminal Procedure Act relating to fingerprints, which was in existence even before we started with the original bill on the fingerprints, that if a person is not being prosecuted. I must say that in the part dealing with the fingerprints, there is no reference to nullity prosecution. So maybe if we just align it in accordance with that specific section in the fingerprints, I think we at least there will be uniformity and no issue about interpretation. That's my suggestion, Chair.
Honourable Le Bonnet.
I don't know if it's the similar situation, because I don't know the term, but when a case against someone is provisionally withdrawn, and that happens, and then they go back because it needs further investigation, and then they reintroduce it to court 6 months later, a year later. Now, what does that mean in relation to this? Will it mean that they say, oh, well, there's no longer a case against me, and if there's one in 6 months, you have to take my DNA again? How is it covered? I'm not sure.
Can we just get back to this one, and then you can respond so we can take a decision on the nolle prosequi? If you move it after five, is it not going to make more sense? Because if you put in, if a decision was taken in a court to withdraw the charges against the person, the DNA profile may not be retained for longer than. If you put it there, is that not a better place to have that part of it? Nolle prosequi. The no prosecution, if a decision was taken not to prosecute.
Gee,
in alignment with your suggestion of the fingerprint muscle.
I agree, you can shift it, but as you say, in alignment with the fingerprint.
In alignment with the fingerprint wording. You take it out from under two, and you put it with five, and they reword it to be aligned with the fingerprint legislation. Basically, then, withdrawing and no prosecution, withdrawing and no prosecution, we then equating them to be the same. And I think that's maybe a safer route to go. And you will align it. But now my concern is, hopefully there will be few of these issues.
Gee, if I can add there, I think normally the circumstances will actually determine whether it's a firm. I think the issue about the private prosecution came in where the state doesn't do anything and the complainant is convinced there is a case. So he asked for the certificate of nolle prosequi in order to be able to perform the private prosecution. But normally, if a case is just remanded for further investigation, etc., it will be clear that the case is not really permanently withdrawn. But if there is a permanent withdrawal, I think it will, in most instances, it will be clear from the case itself.
George?
I thought your suggestion, because what Commissioner Jacobs is not helping us. This 2H, Article 5, what it says, it talks about withdrawal, whether it's permanent or not, but it also does not stop the prosecutor to re-prosecute the person. That was our argument. That's why we're saying it's in a shikandu, it's 3 months. They say after 3 months, the prosecutor re-prosecute this person. You just immediately removed. Then it means again you must again go and take this. That was our concern.
But I think we're in agreement, and I don't think the department is different from us, that we go the route of moving it from here, move it there, reword it so that it's in alignment with the fingerprint legislation, and then we take from there. Can I just ask that you respond to Honourable Kulabana's question as well?
Chair, that was actually the observation that I've made in terms of the practical implication that normally it's evident from the case itself, and even the decision that's made in court. If the prosecutor asks for this case to be provisionally withdrawn, the prosecutor might not be clear whether he will actually in institute proceedings. So he asks for further investigation, and once he receives the case, he reapplies, might then decide whether to prosecute or not. So in that case, it's clear that the case is not like permanently withdrawn. It is just for further investigation.
Are you satisfied with what we have in here? The B, C, and D now covers all ways of non-prosecution. Are you satisfied? Because we're taking one out now. Are we satisfied? Answer from the legal team, please.
I think specifically if it's aligned with the fingerprint card, that is a section that had been in operation for since, I want to say, 1977, and I think even in the 1955 Criminal Procedure Act, as well. So I don't think if we didn't have any interpretation problems with that section, and we align it here, that we will now suddenly run into that problem.
Saying yes. They're satisfied. In a legal fashion, because I get paid by the word. Continue, please. Let's look at three. The application referred to must be submitted to the authorized office for copy and therefore provided to the board. Happy with that? We agreed because we had quite a lengthy discussion on that. The profile of the person referred to may not be retained for longer than 3 years in the case of an adult, 12 months in the case of a child. After the authorized officer has been notified in accordance with subsection 6 or 7. Continue, please, Mr. George.
Can I ask the police now? If he is a gay, which is in court, how long does it take for the investigating officer, not to all the police, the investigating officer, to know that the case has been dismissed? You know why I'm asking that question, Madam? I'm worried about this waiting for 60 days. I have no problem with 60 days, but there must be some responsibility to the police. If there was... No, it's 60 days from the clerk, the court. I'm saying the police officer who investigated the case surely should know...
Mr. George, we're not there yet. We're not there yet.
Where are we? You said authorized, notified in accordance with subsection 6 and 7.
We're at 5. We're looking at if a decision was taken at court, withdraw the charges against the person, the profile may not be retained for longer than 3 years in the case of an adult and 12 months in the case of a child. That's where we are.
Good on.
Straight on that part. Are we satisfied with what we are saying there?
Oh, no.
I'm not sure whether it's reading correctly. You see, what worries me is the principle here was the following. The principle that you can apply, and then it must be expunged immediately. If you don't apply, then it must be done within 3 years. And this is not saying it. This is not saying it. If no application is received, first of all, it must say the application referred to must be submitted. The DRF of an agency must be moved immediately. Okay, it says that. But I think what we need to say here, the profile of the person referred to in subsection 2, if no application has been received, the profile of a person referred to in subsection 2 may not be retained longer than 3 years in the case of adult, 12 months in the case of a child. Can we get comments from your side on this?
Chair, I'm in agreement that we can insert that part there, but the chairperson has suggested if no application referred to in the previous subsection is received, to just link that to up that there's clarity about the period. That it will be immediately removed if there's an application. If there's no application, then it can only be retained for that period.
The point is, the principle is we want it removed as soon as possible, but not longer than the 3 years. That's the argument we had all along with you people around this issue. With 6, 5, we've taken out. We're just agreeing that they put in, if no application was received, it must be removed within 3 years. Within 3 years. Why are we not also saying not longer than 3 years? For are we saying within 3 years? Why are we lowering the standards here?
has the same effect of the same.
I mean, in any case, I don't think your interpretation is correct. Even forget about subs and knowing subs. I don't believe your interpretation is correct. It may not be kept. You're now allowing, by saying it may not be kept, you're allowing them to keep it. If you say that they must, it must be removed within 3 years, you're obliging them to consciously put an effort to it to remove it. That's the difference.
But the state law advisors don't agree. Chairperson, we concede that we can change it in that way because the focus has changed now with regard to application, because we start with applications, but if the application is not received, then it has to be removed within a certain period. So we agree with the proposal.
So we put that change in as well, please. Can we continue then? But I want to ask members not to reopen the debates that we had. So, Mr. George, we continuously talked about it, and we talked about why we wanted a responsibility also to the clerk of the court there. But continue your question, please.
I'm not against the responsibility of the clerk of the court. I'm saying there must be some responsibility to the police, because I don't believe an investigating officer would not know that the case which he or she was investigating has been finalized. I'm saying there must be some responsibility to the investigating officer.
Mr. George, if we do that, we're opening a loophole. Because the court communicating to subs is an official document. An investigating officer reporting to subs, documents disappear. Do you think DNA profiles is not going to disappear in the same way for an investigating officer simply to inform then, Commissioner Shezi, my case has been finalized, the person was found not guilty. Please remove their DNA profile. Can't do that. The communication from the court makes it official. It makes it an outcome of the court. It gives such proof as well that the court has said this person is set free, or we have set it aside. Okay. God, you just told us there's only one honest police officer. Sorry.
Thank you, Chair. The convicted offender index, 15J1, the convicted offender index must contain forensic DNA profiles derived by means of forensic DNA analysis from a bodily sample, A, that was entered into the arrestee index, but an arrestee has subsequent to the entering of use of her forensic DNA profile from the arrestee index been convicted of an offence, or B, that was taken from a person convicted of an offence either before or after the coming into operation of this chapter. 2. Upon the conviction of the child's forensic DNA profile must be retained on a database referred to in this chapter, subject to provisions relating to expungement of a conviction or sentence of a child as provided for in Section 87 of the Child Justice Act 2008. 3. The forensic DNA profile of a convicted offender who has been pardoned in terms of Section 84.2J of the Constitution of the Republic of South Africa, 1996, or whose criminal record has been expunged in terms of sections 271B to 271D of the Criminal Procedure Act, must be removed by the authorized officer from the convicted offender index within 3 years of being notified of the pardon or expungement by the Director General of Justice and Constitutional Development. 4. Subject to subsection 2 and 3, the forensic DNA profiles in the convicted offender index must be stored on the NFDD and be retained indefinitely.
Members, any issues, any questions? Can I just take you back to the previous section, 15I again, sorry. We did say, and I remember it was in the evening meeting, that SAPS must inform the applicant when their profile has been removed. And it's now no longer here. Can we just, it's a simple sentence that need to be added. And we also said that the board must also be informed of that, because you're informing the board about the application, therefore you've got to inform the board that you've actually done that. Okay, then 15J.
Just thinking that, we had a discussion about whether or not was going to put huge administrative burden on the SAPs. I don't know whether that would be the situation or not, but considering what's happening with other administrative issues in the SAP, such as the firearm issue, I'm quite hesitant to say that they do this. I mean, is it, I'm just trying to think, if one wants to take, one can write and say, has it been expunged, and they write back and say yes, but what is the reason for asking for that?
It's administrative justice. You put in a request, you need to get a response back. It's administrative justice. That needs to be done. You won't put in a request if you not want to know that it has been done. And we had that discussion that evening as well. And it doesn't have to be such an administrative burden. I mean, SAPs have improved the administration around cases in terms of informing people via SMS, etc., etc. Commissioner Shezi and Mr. Salman in that order.
Thank you, Chairperson. Even in a system solution, there will be provision for that, which when it's expunged, it automated for the SMS contact details if they are up to date. No, but we will be let in.
I also think we must keep the balance. We can't expect the applicant to write a second letter and he's not even gotten a response to the first one as well. That would create bad impressions around this issue. So the system itself, as you correctly say, can give that solution as well. Mr. Salman?
I think the notification is important in our future because it relates to the application for removal, because when an application is made and no removal is made, then a person can lodge a complaint with the board.
Are we in agreement? Okay. And convicted of the index, we're happy with that part of it? Continue with investigative index, please.
Thank you, Chair.
Chairperson, I think it must be an oversight on our side as well. And the expungement of the record of the child in terms of child justice, like we don't have a time period like in a pardoning, where we said it must be removed within 3 years. So once a person is expunged, within what time period must it be removed?
It's not an oversight from our side, it's a technical oversight. We did say 12 months, where we say 3 years for whatever reason, we say 12 months for children. We said throughout the bill, that must be the way it is. So if the oversight is there, it's because the technical team forgot to put it there.
3%, the 12 months is in the arrestee index. That's not in the convicted index. Convicted offender index is indefinite unless it is removed in the subject to 2 or 3.
Making is that we said that they must apply this throughout the bill where it's about children. I see it's not here, but we have said it must be here. So the fact that it's not here, you see, what worries me about the gaps that are still here is that on Tuesday we want to vote on this bill, which means now Tuesday we will have to spend at least another hour just going through the problems that we're now picking up. Hopefully there won't be any, but let's see. Continue, please.
Thank you, Chair. 15K.
I'm going to put it. Continue, please.
Chair, 15K, 1A. An investigative index must contain forensic DNA profiles from a bodily sample taken from a person with his or her informed consent or authorized in accordance with Section 36E2. B, if the person referred to in paragraph A is a child, the sample may only be taken with the informed consent of the child's parent or guardian. 2, for the purposes of this section, informed consent means that the person consents in writing to the taking of a buccal sample after a police official has informed him or her, A, of the manner in which the buccal sample will be taken, B, that he or she is under no obligation to give a buccal sample, C, that the sample or the forensic DNA profile derived from it may produce evidence that might be used in a court of law. D, that the buccal sample taken under this section and the forensic DNA profile derived from it may only be used for purposes referred to in Section 15F. E, that any profile derived from a sample taken under this section will be removed within a period of 3 months after the case has been finalized. and if that he or she will be notified of the removal of his or her DNA profile. 3, a profile in the investigative index must be stored on the NFDD and be removed within 3 months after the authorized officer is notified that the case is finalized.
Can I hear you on this one?
I am worried about B. Yeah, 2B. We talk here, that is an investigative index. It says after a police official has informed him or her that he is...
Mr. George, I'm going to interrupt in the interest of time. It's actually the volunteer index. We have renamed the investigative index because there will be DNA profiles initially on that will migrate to a next index. So we also, it's back to the scenario, a crime committed in this room, all of us are being asked. It will then go in there.
Because now, you see, if the police is investigating a case, has got a reasonable evidence that this person has committed a crime. Now, if you're saying that this policeman says, you're under no obligation, this person is a suspect. He is under obligation to either, because we contradicted what we said previously, with his consent or without his consent.
Now we talk about the charge. George, 36E2, have a look at that as well. We say that a person, we had this discussion throughout, a volunteer also because of not knowing and not understanding what this is about might say, no, I'm not going to give you my DNA. Then you can get a warrant to get their DNA. And that's what it makes provision for. He's not a suspect. He's not a suspect. Yeah, but not at that point. He might become a suspect, but at that point in time, he is not a suspect. He's a volunteer because of a crime that was committed. He might become a suspect, but at that point in time, he's not. Crime is committed here. I did it. They don't know I did it. They take all of our DNA. I also give mine because I think I'm going to get away with it. From that, they determine it's me. Then they will take this and I will become part of the arrestee index there. If I understand correctly, yeah. Happy? Bass or boss? Are we satisfied with that? George, can I just ask you, read the same session again, and instead of having the investigative index have volunteer index. Then you read it again and then you tell me whether you're satisfied. The crime scene. Oh, what's wrong? That's Mr. George, I saw it.
Yeah, but you see, this the police are here, but they're not even investigating. Again, after this meeting, I'm going to be forwarded to pay for the registration. That's like that. I'm going to be told that you nearly killed an old man in a committee meeting.
You okay, Mr. Lawrence?
No,
okay. Mr. George, the point is that this index was previously called the volunteer index. We have changed that name to the investigative index. My provision for the fact that through this index they might pick up the culprit and then they're moving that person once they get, that person gets arrested to the arrestee index. So it was us that changed it.
Probably I'll also read it because I'm worried with the investigation in the
But let's proceed, Madam Chair. We will.
After you've read it, you can come back. We can come back to it. But I think we it's just you just. Confusing each other at the important time. Read it on your own time and then come back if there's a problem. Can we continue, please?
Thank you, Chair. The elimination index 15L. The elimination index must contain.
Sorry, just interrupt you, Honourable.
Sorry. About C. I'm sorry. On this, when of the removal of a notification of the removal of the DNA profile, how long must it take for the notification to happen? What I'm saying is, say you get my question, sir. Yeah. Because so if what if they just keep it and say yes, we're still going to notify them?
We make it clear that it must be the profile must be removed within 3 months after the case has been finalized. But the member is asking in if that you will notify the volunteer that it has been removed, and she's suggesting that we should have a time frame there as well, 30 days after the 3 months.
Thank you, Chairperson. Perhaps we may wait it to be kept up within the 3 months. You don't want to delay the process. Once you finalize the decision, it must be an automated message so that you don't go back to another period. So within that 3 months, so we may have to see how we wait that to include that the removal within and the notification in 3 months. It can be done.
Might be worded to say that any profile derived from a sole bank under the section will be removed and the person. And the person will be informed of such within a period of 3 months after the case has been finalized. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Okay. Then we can remove F. Address your concern as well, that how do we word it? That's what I'm trying to say. Now, you're giving consent, you're telling the person this is what will happen. Within 3 months after the case has been finalized, we will remove your DNA, Ms. Chetty, and we will inform you. That's what we say. That's why I'm suggesting that we word it to say that any profile derived from a sample taken under this section will be removed when and the person informed within a period of 3 months after da 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 da. Then you address both of these issues. Really, we were supposed to be going through this thing today. We've got to. No, I'm busy. Next person, wait. We've got to look at both of these issues. You can't just look at the one of these. You've got to inform the person that you will be informed within 3 months after the case has been finalized. Otherwise, the person is not going to know to expect something from SAPS. And then 3 is the action that's got to be taken, and we can include it there as well. Nobody's listening to anybody.
not what I'm saying, Majesty. That's not what I'm saying. I was saying that we can simplify both of these issues. E and F can be combined. That's what I've said. Then you remove F. You combine E and F. And then in 3, you repeat again because 3 becomes the action that must be taken by SAS. The first part is the information that you give the person. 3 then is the action that must be taken. Parliamentary law advisors.
Thank you, Chairperson. I was going to propose that we have the person, so 3 months of an application, be added to 3, and so that the person is also notified.
Parliamentary law advisor, point of order now. We've just talked about this issue. The one is you've got to inform, and the first part of it is they inform when you take the sample. 3 is when the action that is expected of SAPS after they have informed this person. It's afterwards. We've just said it must be in both of them. But what we're suggesting is that E and F be combined, that it speaks to 1. And then 3, we just add the 3-month period there as well. It can almost be similar wording than what is above. Can we continue, please? 15L.
Thank you, Chair. 15L, the elimination index must contain forensic DNA profiles derived from a buccal sample from a police office official or any other person who, as part of his or her official duties, attends or processes a crime scene. B, a police official or any other person who may be handling or processing or examining crime scene samples or body samples under this chapter. C, any person directly involved in the servicing of calibration, of servicing or calibration of equipment or in laboratories used in the forensic DNA analysis process. D, any person who enters an examination area in a forensic DNA laboratory or process, handles or examines crime scene samples or bodily samples under this chapter. And E, where possible, any person directly involved in the manufacturing of consumables, equipment, utensils or reagents.
So we look at that section up to there, please. Anything on in there? C, any person directly involved in the servicing of, in the store machine.
Anything else,
please?
Sub 2, Chair, from the commencement of this chapter, all new recruits to the service must be required to submit a buccal sample for purposes of forensic DNA profiles derived therefrom to be included in the elimination index. 3, the forensic DNA profiles in the elimination index must be stored on NFDD and be retained unless the profile has been migrated to another index or is no longer required. If for a person referred to in subsection 1 may apply in the police card manner to have his or her profile removed from the elimination index when it is no longer required. 5, nothing in this section prohibits a forensic DNA profile derived from a sample taken from any person mentioned in subsection 1 or 2 to be subjected to a comparative search for purposes referred to in section 15F.
On this? I think there are problems here. We're satisfied. The only thing that we basically added is the fact that you must also be able to ask for your DNA to be removed from that profile. The rest is basically the same. Happy? Yes. Let's continue then, please.
Thank you, Chair. The Missing Persons and Unidentified Human Remains Index. 15M1, the Missing Persons and Unidentified Human Remains Index must contain forensic DNA profiles derived from A, any bodily sample of a missing or unidentified person, or B, any bodily sample taken from unidentified human remains. 2, familial searches may be conducted in respect of forensic DNA profiles referred to in subsection 1. 3, forensic DNA profiles referred to in subsection 1 must be stored until the purpose for which it has been stored has been achieved. 4, a request to conduct a familial search must be submitted to the authorized officer and a copy thereof provided to the board. 5, the board must be notified of any request for the use of familial searches and the outcome thereof. 6, the minister must ensure that policy-related familial searches is developed. 7A, for the purposes of this section, familial searches means a technique whereby a forensic DNA profile derived from a sample, one of a missing person or two, obtained from a family member of a missing person, is deliberately searched against the missing persons and unidentified human remains index of the NFED to obtain a list of forensic DNA profiles that are almost similar to the forensic DNA profile derived from a sample referred to in subparagraph 1 or 2. B, the service may use the results of the familial searches referred to in paragraph 8 as an investigative lead by a specially trained police official to 1, interview family members of the near matches, or 2, identify unidentified human remains. The results of familial searches must be dealt with in a sensitive manner.
Members, can we go back to the section? Can we have a look at it? Can I just say 4 and 5, with the exception of the outcome, seems to be a repetition. A request to conduct a familiar search must be submitted to the authorized officer and copy therefore of provided to the board. The board must be notified of any request. So the request comes in twice. I think what we need here is that the request to conduct a familiar search must be submitted to the authorized officer and a copy thereof provided to the board. The board must be informed about the outcome. Or the board must be provided with the outcome. Will you look at that? Anything else under this section? There was little DNA, and I see that's in. Nothing. Continue, please.
Thank you, Chair. Comparative forensic DNA search and communication of information. 15N1, the authorized officer must perform comparative searches on forensic DNA profiles that are entered onto the NFDD for the purposes referred to in section 15F and communicate the outcome of the comparative search as contemplated in subsection 2. No person may disclose any information which he or she had obtained in the exercise of any powers or the performance of any duties in terms of this chapter except A, to a person who of necessity requires it for the performance of his or her functions in terms of this act or any other act or is provided for in section 15O. B, if he or she is a person who of necessity supplies it in the performance of his or her functions in terms of this act or any other act. C, in respect of information which is required in terms of any law or is evidence in any court of law. D, to any competent authority which requires it for the institution of any criminal proceedings, including a preliminary investigation or an inquest. E, to an accused person, or where the person is a child to his or her parent or guardian, or his or her legal representative for criminal defense purposes, or F, to a person convicted of an offense, or his or her legal representative for exoneration purposes.
Members, can I hear you on this section? Satisfied? To the previous section as well. Can I just find out the bodily sample definition? Does it cover what you use in order to identify human remains? So, why did you allow it to be that? Because you use tissue, you use teeth. What do you use? Are you bodily sample as defined in the Act? Is it going in the bill? Is it going to address this?
For unidentified human remains, a tissue is used, at times a teeth or bones and so forth. So bodily sample remains in the Act as it is defined refers to body fluids and not those elements of tissue. So I mind going on to find out in the current context what has happened, but when this question is now posed, it took me back now to say it's not only to be in the crime scene index, because normally if it is taken in there as part of the crime scene, it is loaded as a crime scene sample. But now that we have categorized it separately, we may have to really look into this.
We don't actually have time to re-look into things. fine. You can stay tomorrow as well.
Okay, my proposal would be that, the crime scene sample must be included here, otherwise the reference won't be correct.
But where are you going to include it? And how are you going to include it?
Chair, if we say it must contain forensic DNA profiles derived from any crime scene sample or bodily sample of a missing person or an identified fourth person, or any crime scene sample or bodily sample taken from unidentified human remains. Chair, the 15M1, the missing person and unidentified human remains index must contain forensic DNA profiles derived from any crime scene, a bodily sample or crime scene sample of a missing or unidentified person. Because, Chair, I think in some instances a person might be missing, but you get like hair from the brush of the child at home, etc. So it might be a body sample, but crime scene sample must also be included. And then B, any body sample or crime scene sample taken from unidentified human remains.
Case of, for instance, a natural disaster, or where you can't identify the body, or an airplane crash, at that point in time it will be treated as a crime scene until the investigation has been conducted. Yeah. Okay. Continue, please.
Thank you, Chair. The comparative forensic DNA search and communication of information, I think I already went through that one, Chair.
There's nothing there, so we can continue with one thereafter. Foreign and international law enforcement.
Foreign and international law enforcement agencies 1501. The authorized officer may, subject to the provisions of this Act and any other applicable law, upon receipt of a forensic DNA profile from a foreign state or a recognized international law enforcement organization, court or tribunal, compare the forensic DNA profile with any of the indices in the NFDD except the investigative index for the purposes set out in section 15F. 2. The authorized officer may, for the purposes referred to in section 15F, communicate a forensic DNA profile contained in the crime scene index to a foreign state or a recognized international law enforcement organization, court or tribunal. 3. The communication of the outcome of the comparative search contemplated in subsection 1 or profile contemplated in subsection 2 may only be done subject to the international obligations of the Republic. If any request in terms of this section and the outcome thereof must be reported to the Board.
Willis, can I hear you on this section? Squirrel or not?
It just strikes me that if a foreign criminal is killer, they will proffer their DNA at a scene, and they will therefore be under the investigative index. And now we are asked internationally to do a search, and we are saying, but you can't look at this particular index. Is that not going to cause, or does that not have the possibility of letting someone slip through our fingers, their fingers?
Well, you have no choice because we haven't arrested that person. I mean, you can't feed people in that way, Mr. Jacobs.
I think, Chair, also if the person has offended previously, etc., it will be on the on one of the other other indexes. So it might be possible that we do have it, although you might have opted it for the investigative index. But that DNA can still be on the, otherwise on the rest of the index.
And for the purpose of the investigation, investigation you can run the DNA against the crime scene, crime scene samples. So there's nothing stopping, and that's what we want to achieve.
Okay.
Can we continue then? Is all we have here? Continue then. Can I, one question just. In the transitional arrangements, we were quite taken aback by the fact that you provided what is available on our DNA profile currently on 44 in its totality. What are we doing in the transitional arrangements to rectify that situation?
Chair, I think General Shea can come in here, but I understood that that situation has been rectified already.
I want assurance that it's been done. If it has been done, then I think this committee needs to be informed in writing by the National Commission that it has been done.
Chairperson, perhaps let us respond in writing about what is the current status. But then to also answer a question on the first part on what on the transitional arrangement are we going to do, if it is accepted as is, where the code is and so forth, the migration would only then be of the crimes in extent, which are the ones that are in the Interpol database as we speak.
The point is, what we're asking, and then you still have to answer the question, because we need to know. We can't wait for that answer in writing. We've got to vote on this call soon. We want the answer in writing for our own record so that it's confirmed in writing that this is the case. Why has it been rectified? Has it not been rectified? And what are we doing if it's not been rectified yet? How are we rectifying it until this act comes into place?
Let me find out what directive. Just let me get me reminded in this instance, because my understanding or the what I can recall the committee to have inquired about Interpol, whether we have profiles in the Interpol database. If they were so, what were the provisions there? Was it not that Chairperson?
Asked you whether you, in fact, at some point, you were told us that our profile is available on Interpol. And we said to you, but how is that possible? Now we change the act, and we say there must be a request, and then you can search. We're not allowing SAPs to put even the convicted criminal's profile on an international database. Had that situation changed since the last answer to now? If not, how are we changing that situation in the transitional arrangements so that we can get to this point? In other words, how are we locking down access to that database?
Chairperson, we didn't come to anything in the transitional arrangements, but we have kept us in the line of doing the comparative searches in general, because they anyway still have requests there. So I'm sure you must be explicit in relating it as we've done there. The industry, but there's no specific one only for the Interpol or the international database. It was just an omission. We will have to cover it in the meantime before we get there.
I don't understand the word that you're saying. I'm asking you again. I'll break it down now. Is there still DNA profile from whatever index of the South African DNA non-existing databases available to Interpol?
Yes, Chairperson. The crime index is available in the Interpol, and it's got about 10,300 stains profiles. And that we have provided the response in part of the submission in the previous one.
What did you say?
The crime index was available. Remember, Chairperson, after we discussed that issue, you said we must provide with the written submissions. We send it as part of the compilation I sent into. So it is there.
There. And why, if you know, do you not think it shouldn't be there following this law now? Once the law becomes an act, do you agree, just after we've gone through this section now, that it shouldn't be there anymore? Once the law is an act?
Of course, we will have to take a look there to watch what have we opened. And maybe then I'll take off in terms of the expansion and things. Now I know what your question is, but now I've heard that. Where are you getting to? Then I'll take off.
I agree there might be a transitional provision to say that because if we are certain it's only
It is only crime scene, and the Act now also allows for crime scene samples to be, or profiles to be given. I think there can be a transitional provision to say that crime scene, and just limited to crime scene samples, but crime scene samples that, you can say that only crime scene samples that have been provided to international organizations, and that is basically Interpol, can be retained there. I'm not sure, but I can't really see.
What's the problem with that? You've got 10,000 something crime scene samples somewhere in cyberspace available for Interpol. You don't see it as a problem once this all comes into being. Show me the request for every 10,000 of those. Every one of those 10,000. Show me the request.
What request is exactly? Because what happens is Interpol has got what's called the I-247. It's their gateway for manage the database. And that database is also using CODIS as a source. And it's got 66 countries that are participating in the database for the Interpol gateway. And each and every country has got rules in terms of the searches that can be made in their database. So once you've taken your samples to be loaded on an Interpol database, they're kind of in the repository with their access codes and their responsibility codes. Not any of the 66 countries can access that repository unless there is a bilateral agreement, as I think of it explained earlier. So what happens is when there is a comparative search requested by any of those countries, a request will be made to Interpol, South Africa, NCB to say, can we at this stage access your database? We have records. We've got 64 requests of the comparatives that were made ever since the loading of such into the database. So I don't know what is the number that is being requested.
You're saying this 10,300, there's no way, unless we make a request, and we specifically for that particular profile index, or any, can we make a request that say, take that 10,300 out, would they agree, because if it's a request, they might not agree.
That also put to the committee comfort. We can delete all the 10,300, like sending an email today. As of the application of the day, we want all of them to expand and get a certificate of the expansion. But what the chairperson is asking now is when the act comes into play, I hear a question in twofold. Would you maintain them, would you remove them, or what would be the provision? Have you included it in the considerations? I think that's another part of the question, other than what is being asked now. But removing them, it's their memorandum of agreements, their rules are also how you do that. It can be done. It's not a problem. It's not belonging to them. It is within our custodianship. It's not Interpol. But if they go to conduct a search in their database, no country will search unless we give a yes.
How many requests have you received over the last year?
It's about 50,000, if I remember well. I can give that request in full, even the copy. I can't give it from the head now, but it is not over 50 requests that we've received. Even the chairperson asked in the previous time when we did an examination, were there any matches received to date? I told the committee it was zero matches to date at the moment.
Chiefly, then it comes back to the fact, why? What is the advantage for South Africa to have that 10,600 somewhere in cyberspace?
In international law, when you have your missing person, that person may just as well be abducted in one of these countries. So when we have it in any one of these, any one of these, yes, crime scene may as well be those samples like it just spoken just a minute ago to say unidentified bodies. And they crime samples, those are crime scene samples. If you have unidentified bodies in cases of mass disasters and crashes, they are categorized as such. And as part of what I explained earlier when you asked, I said, those were treated as crime scene samples. So if you have got those loaded as crime scene samples, and then you want them to be searched against an international database, you may just as well get who of your countries were in there. So it has its benefits. It has its, we kind of say, because there is no need of the 52 requests, now they must be fine.
That's the point you're missing. We're not asking for it to be expunged. Okay? That's not what we're asking. First of all, you say crime scene samples. We say crime scene samples, this access. Crime scene samples can be kept indefinitely. The issue is the fact that do we
know what happens to that on that database. Please, if you allow me once to ask my question finally and then answer, then maybe we can find each other. Last time when we asked you, we were shocked to hear that South Africa had DNA in the human rights section, have DNA profiles there. Now we hear it's crime scene samples. Right? Wait, I'm not done yet. I will switch off the microphone when I am. What we want to know is, given what this legislation says now, all we ask you is, are we satisfied, given what the legislation says, and the foreign and international law enforcement agencies, that it covers and that that we do not need transitional arrangements to deal with the fact that that total index of 10,000 is available on Interpol?
Chairperson, I think it won't be needed in the sense that those are crimes in Spain. We are not putting in there references which may have to be migrated.
Please, Commissioner Shazi, I'm asking, are you comfortable, it's a yes or a no, that if this bill is passed and it becomes an act, that 10,000 samples there are not in contradiction to what the act says? Simple as that.
Chairperson,
yes. We are comfortable. can I just check what's for me? You see, because I want to, any request in terms of this election and outcome, there must be reported to the board. Assuming you don't have a board now, assuming you report to the board, and the board says, no, thank you, we don't want to be part of this thing, what do we do?
The board would then have to apply to Chairperson the international law admissions, because I don't know if the board has the power over the statute that agrees. I don't know international law exists. The lawyers are here to advise. Because every country signs on international cooperation with other countries, also on law enforcement. So if they say that we are not participating because we are signatories to that, then all processes must follow, really. It's not a crisis. In terms of whether we'll be comfortable that the categories of the crime scenes that are in there, we can also get a submission from Interpol to give an official correspondence in this regard. And that was, of course, there could be others that you might have missed, which I'm not certain if there could be any.
In this exercise, just last question. Is more undermining of any human rights or rights of individuals?
These are in the form of human beings. Are there no human rights violations?
Chairperson, I don't know how the violations will be there on crimes and things which are not owned by anybody. That's what the discussion has been going on until now, as we discussed. So, is there any, I'm not sure which one. Unless that's something that if you open it up, maybe there's something I'm really completely missing out, then we are really able to revise it. But that was the understanding of following the discussion with the committee.
To stop us running around in circles by changing the subject. It says here, and it uses the word may, the authorised officer may, throughout May. Now, I would like to know how May relates to us being signatories as a nation. We have agreed to supply that information in relation to international law enforcement organizations. So I don't know the discretion is allowed. Surely we must supply that information because the nation has signed an international agreement. So I'm nervous by undermining, by saying May, in other words, you give them the discretion. How is this authorized officer allowed the discretion in terms of an international agreement? Surely there is an international obligation the nation has already signed to provide that information to international law enforcement organizations.
Chair, the May indicates, as the members rightly said, indicates a discretion. But I'm not sure as well that, that all crime scene samples need to be placed there on the international database. It might be a needs-driven thing in terms of specific investigations. And then as well, I think it will be unnecessary to place the whole crime scene database on it. As generalists indicated, Commissioner Shea indicated that 10,300 samples have been placed on the Interpol database. It's clear to me that from a functional point of view, there is no necessity to absolutely place all crime scene samples on the database.
My concern is the following, that, but you're not addressing the May and the month issue, but I think in terms of international law as well, you still got to go through the question that the country who signed can still decide, yes or no. On that, it's like extradition agreements, well, and I mean, we've got a good example of the one currently in the UK, I think. The concern I have is the following. 1301 speaks to the fact that somebody asks and we then run it. 2 speaks to that we can refer a profile contained in the crime scene index to a foreign state and ask them. Correct? Or for evidence purposes, if they request it. Correct? Now, if your argument is missing an unidentified person, as part of the reason for having it there, where the missing and unidentified index searches. Wait, I'm not done. Listen to my argument, please. Then if you look at 4, and that's where my concern comes in with your current arrangement versus your transitional arrangements. 4 says, any request in terms of this section and the outcome thereof must be reported to the board. So you can't tell me that there is no need for any transitional arrangement in this regard.
The transitional position to say that he was removed the ones that are already there. I mean, if no hit has been made on it up until now, it can really not really do much damage to remove it from the database and then to start fresh in terms of new applications, etc., to put it on in par with the provisions of the Act.
I think we must make it clear. We're not saying that you must remove it or not. We want to know, it's a simple issue. Given the fact that it's there, are we happy that there is no transitional arrangement required for it? That's the first thing. And in order for progress sake, I'm asking that you look at it and come back to us on Tuesday morning regarding that. The second thing is, if you look at this, you put crimes in there. What about missing persons and unidentified bodies? And whether there's a need to make provision for that as well under this one. Because surely that most probably is going to be used more than the crossing one if 54 was the request. I would love to know of the 54 how many were actually they were hit. So can you just look at the whole thing first? Come back. If you tell us now we're happy that everything is fine, that's fine. Then we leave it. Agreed. Let's carry on.
Thank you, Steve. I'm not going to use the normal wording. I'll say, if I might take the committee, like, just to section 15M. The missing persons and unidentified index. Page 46, Chair. 15M. We have inserted there any bodily sample or crime scene sample, both in A and B. Chair, if we can just propose that we insert it rather at the bottom of the page. That the last three lines at the bottom of the page that it will read is deliberately search against the missing persons and unidentified human remains index of the NFDB and the crime scene index to obtain a list of forensic DNA profiles. Because yeah, I don't think there's any other way than comparing it with the crime scene index, especially if you have, say, for instance, a missing child, you have DNA of the child, but you found the body elsewhere and that DNA is on the crime scene database. So you have to compare it with the crime scene database as well. Thank you, Chief. If I can just repeat, at the bottom of page 46, if you will against the missing persons and unidentified human remains index of the NFDB and the crime scene index to obtain a list. In other words, the comparison can be made within that specific index as well as with the crime scene index.
Commissioner Jacobs, can I just ask you, can I understand that in terms of A, but if you look at 1B, the question comes again, any bodily sample taken from unidentified human remains. You might not be able to take a bodily sample from unidentified human remains. You might want to take a tooth or a tissue or whatever. And shouldn't they also make revision or crime scene sample? So, no, that's just taking it out. So what I'm saying is just look at whether it shouldn't still stay in B. And then you can, I agree with you on the bottom one, but that in B it should still refer to a crime scene sample as well. Because you're not necessarily going to have a bodily sample of the unidentified body. The body might be burnt, and therefore you need something else than to determine it. Great. Okay. And then can you just repeat what you're suggesting on three, the bottom two, bottom run and two?
So it will read, is deliberately searched against the missing person and unidentified human remains index of the NFPD and the crime scene index to obtain a list of forensic DNA profiles.
That's
fine.
Then we make
provision
for crime scene sample as well as the index. That's fine. Okay, then continue with the next one, please.
Chair, page 49, compliance with quality management system, 15P. 1, the authorized officer must develop and recommend standards for quality management, including standards for testing the proficiency of forensic science laboratories and forensic analysts conducting forensic DNA analysis. 2, the standards referred to in subsection 1 must 8, specify criteria for quality management and proficiency tests applied to various types of forensic DNA analysis. B, include a system for grading proficiency testing performance to determine whether a laboratory or forensic analyst is performing acceptably, and C, comply with standards set by International Organization for Standardization. Chair, that is what the ISO actually stands for. We thought it wise not to put in the specific standard here because it can change, etc. The reason why it is ISO, I think it's in the French. It's a bit different, but English is the International Organization for Standardization.
That's
what
with
that
is. George, Ms.
I'm satisfied, Mary. I'm just worried about the sequence. I think this three, if listening to what Commissioner Ashish was saying yesterday, should be up there. Because it is not something which have got a choice. It's that one of the primary requirements that you must comply with standards set up by the International Organization for Standardization. I will not argue for it strongly, but I would believe that it has been better placed to be up there at the top, because it's the most critical part of this section.
My comment is along the same sort of lines. We've been complaining for years that labs aren't accredited internationally. Now, what I'd like to know is, in the quality management system and all other areas, have international guidelines been followed all the way down the line? I mean, I don't want to hear in 3 months' time that actually something you're doing is not in line with international best practice, and that is what's stopping us getting international accreditation. So please, just reassure us here.
Thank you, Chair. Honourable George's comments, I think it's a correct. We can renumber it so that the last one comes to A1 because the compliance requirements, the internal quality management standards are based on the on the international organization standards, the compliance process for it. And two, Honourable Gordon, it is correct that the quality is developed well. Among other responsibilities that the committee said it should include, the reporting of that to the board, because the board will also have oversight in the process.
We're not just simply going to make C1. That's not, I think, what we're saying. I think we're saying the authorized officer has developed and recommend standards in line with the International Organization for Standardization for Quality Management, including standards for testing, etc., etc. That's what Mr. George is requesting. Are you comfortable with that, Commissioner Jacobs?
Thank you, Chair. Analysis, retention, storage, destruction, and disposal of samples. 15Q1, bodily samples and crime scene samples received at the forensic laboratory must be analyzed and loaded on the NFDD within 30 days, unless there is a compelling reason in terms of priorities why such samples cannot be analyzed within that period. 2, the authorized officer must report to the board any compelling reason contemplated in subsection 1 when it occurs. 3, if a sample is not analyzed within the period referred to in subsection 1, such non-compliance will not have any effect on the investigation or prosecution concerned. 4, the authorized officer must institute disciplinary action for any failure to analyze and load the samples on the NFDD within the period referred to in subsection 1 without a compelling reason. 5, any body sample taken from a person from the commencement of this chapter and which is not a crime scene sample must be destroyed and disposed of within 3 months after a forensic DNA profile is obtained and loaded on the NFDD. 6, records of the destruction of body samples must be kept by the authorized officer in the prescribed manner and must be reported to the board annually. 7, the National Commissioner must report to the board within 90 days of receipt of the report contemplated in section 15Y3 on the steps taken to rectify issues contained there. Great part there, Chair, was a specific decision of the committee.
Members, can we have a look at that? 15Q1, the very last sentence, cannot be analyzed or loaded within that period. You put it in as the first part, we haven't put it in at that part. Why such samples cannot be analyzed or loaded within that period? No, it can be either the analyzed part or the loaded part. You might have analyzed it in that period, but you haven't loaded it. So
does that not leave it then open-ended? Because they could say there's a compelling reason for the next year not to do it. So should they not be, I just feel there should be some, it's just saying, well, okay, we say in 30 days, but we don't really mean it because you might say you have a reason. So then it doesn't happen.
Remember, we also said 4 months come in, where we say the authorized officer must institute disciplinary action for any failure to analyze and load samples on the NFC within the period. And then 7, strengthening the whole thing even more in terms of the commissioner's responsibility to report back to the board as well. Analyzed and loaded. So it's just that last part must be loaded as well, not only the analyzed part of it. Can we continue?
Chair, the infrastructure 15R, the National Commission on Visa Delegate must acquire and maintain adequate information technology infrastructure.
Sorry, for a second. In this section, we asked you also for crime scene samples. that it's not only, we say here today that, that the criticism is that it's not only that the crime scene samples will not get analyzed and voted.
Jay, it is in 115Q1, but we will see, look through the whole second. Body samples and crime scene samples, yeah. Thank you, Chair. Infrastructure 15R, the National Commission or User Delegate must acquire and maintain adequate information technology infrastructure and systems to support the efficient analysis of DNA samples, the performance of comparative searches against the NFDD, and the administrative maintenance of the NFDD.
Yeah, members on this one?
Probably that should read, well, it says acquire, but I don't know if that includes, yeah, acquire might cover it, include creation within. Yeah, maybe acquire to me means buying it, which is fair enough, but they may actually already have a lot. No, I'm sure. I think acquire covers it.
You please.
This reminds me that we still need to know in terms of readiness whether we've got we in terms of implementation.
Members, we had two briefings on that. We have seen a set of questions that has to be answered Monday week's time. So we will get all of those answers as well.
Sorry, could you just Monday week? Not next week, the following week. So we still won't know next week what this is going to cost.
No, members, we won't know next week what the final figures are. We will know the week thereafter.
I don't want to discuss it next week, but I'm worried about that statement. I'm very worried, because I was assuming that next week we're proceeding to the end. Now, if we don't proceed to the end not knowing whether there will be resources to implement it, it's going to be a problem. But let's start with next week, Madam Chair.
I want to remind you again that we already have DNA. We already have a database. This is the expansion of it, et cetera. And the cost of things is important, and that's why we have called them back twice to this meeting already. Because next week is a public holiday, and because this committee has been sitting, we've sent them the questions. They have until next week, to not this Monday, coming the next Monday to respond to those questions. Members will get the answers in writing. That was the decision that we took as a committee, that we want those answers in writing. We will get them. If members are more comfortable that we only vote for this bill, finally, after that, I have no problem to postpone the voting with another week. None whatsoever. Continue.
Thank you, Chair. Page 51, offences and penalties, 15S. Any person who, with regard to any body sample, crime scene sample, or a forensic DNA profile, derives therefrom, A, uses or allows the use of those samples or forensic DNA profiles derived therefrom, for any purpose other than those referred to in this chapter, or B, tampers with or manipulates the process of the crime of samples or forensic DNA profiles, C, falsely claims such samples or forensic DNA profiles derived therefrom to have been taken from a specific person whilst then to have been taken from another person or source, or, and that was an insertion asked by the committee, or D, discloses information in contravention of section 15N, is guilty of an offence and liable in the case of a natural person, imprisonment for a period not exceeding 15 years, and in the case of a juristic person, to a fine.
We ask you to check whether it covers 15W as well. Did you do that? Does it cover it? We've said 15N and 15W. You've now added 15N. But I'm not sure about 15W. Members, Municipal Parliament's air conditioner has broken down, so if you're uncomfortable, there's nothing we can do about it.
We will make certain the numbering has also changed now, so that the security. Yeah, we have definitely, we have definitely changed the security part well in respect of the disclosure of information.
Okay. Let's see when we get in, when we discover. Anything else on this section? Covered. 15T.
Awareness and training programs, 15T1. The Secretary of Police must ensure that guidelines relating to awareness programs contemplated in subsections 2 and 3 are developed and its implementation monitored and assessed on a regular basis. 2. The National Commissioner and the Executive Director of IPED, referred to in the IPED Act, must develop awareness and training programs for the service and the Independent Police Investigative Directorate respectively, in respect of the regulations referred to in Section 15U, in order to support the implementation and application of this chapter. 3. The National Commissioner must develop awareness programs to make the public aware of the provisions of this chapter, and in particular their rights relating to the taking of DNA samples, the keeping and destruction of DNA samples, and powers of the board to receive and assess complaints relating to DNA.
Yeah, are we satisfied? Mr. Somi?
Let's say the sequencing should not, the sub 1 become sub 3. This is the sequencing now.
Yesterday there was a specific decision of the committee to shift 3 to 1. Yeah.
We said, first of all, the policy around this must be developed, then the rest follows. Continue, please. Access to and security of NFDD.
Thank you, Chair.
It's now 15U, so the W that I referred to is now U.
The National Commissioner must secure the integrity of information on NFDD provided for in this chapter by taking appropriate, reasonable, technical and organizational measures to prevent a loss of, damage to, or unauthorized destruction of information on the NFDD and the unlawful access to communication or processing of information on the NFDD. In order to give effect to Subsection 1, the National Commissioner must take reasonable measures to A, identify all reasonable foreseeable internal and external risks to information on the NFDD under user control, B, establish and maintain appropriate safeguards against the risks identified, C, regularly verify that the safeguards are effectively implemented, and D, ensure that the safeguards are continually updated in response to new risks or deficiencies in previously implemented safeguards. 3, the National Commissioner must have due regard to generally accepted information security practices and procedures which may apply to the services generally or be required in terms of specific laws and regulations relating to security of information applicable to the service. 4, the National Commissioner, after consultation with the Board, must within 6 months of the commencement of this chapter develop standard operating procedures regarding A, access to the NFDD, B, the implementation of safety measures to protect the integrity of information contained on the NFDD, and 5, the National Commissioner must report to the relevant Parliamentary Committee and the Board any breach of the access and security measures referred to in this session as and when such breach occurs. 6, the Secretary of Police must monitor and oversee the security measures instituted by the National Commissioner.
Sorry, can I just ask 5? Should it also not say the National Commissioner must report to the relevant Parliamentary Committee and the Board any breach of the access and security measures referred to in the section as and when such breaches occur and steps taken, you know, steps taken following the breaches? To rectify to make sure it doesn't happen again. I mean, I'm not putting the right wording at all. The National Commission must report to the relevant Parliamentary Committee and the Board any breach of the access and security measures and steps taken to rectify such as referred to in the section as and when such breaches occur. Does it make sense? You'll sort it out. If there are things now covering this, loss, damage and destruction, is it covering it? It doesn't cover the loss, damage or construction because of, destruction because of that.
We'll insert a section of the offence part. We will insert that the A part would be offence.
Please, that's what we are.
One A.
Yeah, one A must also include it in the offence. On page 52. 15U, 1A. There's currently not an offence, an penalty. And we're saying that they must just draw through so that there be an offence and penalty to that as well. So it's the deliberate damage, destruction, etc. Or loss. Okay, can we continue then?
Thank you, Chair. Then on page 54, the establishment and composition of National Forensic Oversight and Ethics Board, 15B1. A National Forensic Oversight and Ethics Board is hereby established. 2. The board must consist of not more than 10 persons appointed by the Minister on a part-time basis for a period not exceeding 5 years, of whom A. 5 members must be from outside the public sector with knowledge and experience in forensic science, human rights law, or ethics relating to forensic science, and B. 3 persons must be from the public sector, namely 1. The Secretary of Police or his or her representative on the level of at least a Chief Director, 2. A representative of Department of Health on the level of at least a Chief Director and who has knowledge in the field of DNA, 3. A representative from the Department of Justice and Constitutional Development on the level of at least a Chief Director who has sound knowledge of constitutional law, and C. A representative from the South African Human Rights Commission. 3. The members of the board referred to in subsection 2A must be appointed by the minister after inviting nominations from the public. 4. The minister must appoint the chairperson of the board who must be a retired judge or a senior advocate with knowledge and experience in the field of human rights, and the deputy chairperson from the remaining members of the board. 5. The deputy chairperson must exercise all the powers and perform all the duties of the chairperson whenever the chairperson is unable to do so. 6. The term of appointment of a member of the board may, before the expiry thereof, be renewed for an additional term. 7. In the case of a vacancy, the minister must fill the vacancy within a reasonable period of time, which period must not exceed 6 months. 8. The board may determine its own governance rules and procedures. 9. The first meeting of the board must be convened by the minister, and thereafter the meetings of the board must be held at least 4 times a year. 10. The board must be funded from the budget allocation of the Civilian Secretariat of Police. Chair, we had the minister there, but after consultations, maybe Mr. Soman can give more light on that, but that has been changed from minister to the Civilian Secretariat of Police. Thank you, Chair. 11. The minister must appoint a full-time secretariat for the board to provide administrative support to the board. 12. The minister may, in consultation with the Minister of Finance, determine the remuneration or payment of expenses for members of the board who are not appointed in terms of the Public Service Act or the Human Rights Commission Act. Chair, shall I continue, sir?
For the timing, can we go back then? Honourable Kula Botman?
I voiced my own concerns against yesterday. I believe we're absolutely failing our duty, leaving this to the minister to do. It should come to a committee to interview these people. And number 11, did you mean a secretary or a secretariat?
pass on board, they're going to need not only one person, they might need two or three people to prepare work for them, to do things on their behalf so that they can take decisions at the point in time when they need. It wasn't just a secretary. Honourable George.
Question to Commissioner Jacobs. You see, yesterday we said they must meet the minimum of one per quarter. But secondly, to 4 times. 4 times is a very tricky one. You see, because if you say 4 times there, they can not meet the first quarter, not meet the second quarter, and then in the last 2 quarters, meet 2 times, or in the last quarter, meet 4 times. So I just wanted to know what the reason why you changed what we said yesterday. We said what minimum of once per quarter.
Before the response, why did they change the budget from the secretariat from the minister to the secretariat? What is the reason behind?
Stop with that one, please.
Thanks, Chair. After yesterday's meeting, I discussed the matter with the Secretary, and the view was that the Ministry has a limited budget, but given the fact that there are expenses and that the Secretariat will be a full-time post, that the budget will be from the Civil Secretariat for Police as a support function to the Minister.
It makes perfect sense. Perfect sense. No, I know they agree. When we proposed the secretariat from the word go, we have said it must come from the secretary's budget. But some people are more wise than others. Can we also look at the question that Ms. Grobarnot has asked?
The quarterly question.
It's the secretariat.
No, I agree with that. Chair has already, I think, answered it, that it must be a secretariat, not secretary. Chair, and then
what happened to our decision yesterday that we must say that the board must meet? No. Before the act must be established before the act comes into being. The appointment of the board.
I think we are sure we have addressed it in the conditional provision, Chair.
Okay. And the removal of a member of the board?
That's what you said, Chair.
Wait.
Chair, just the following subsection, 30.
Okay. Yeah. The other thing is, can you just tell me, but we're still going to look at the rest of it, but the board... The appointment of the board, the people, the parliament must be informed about the appointment of the board, like we do with all others as well. We need to be informed. These are the members of the board. It will also be the public, first public awareness around the board. Members, anything else under this first part of it? What? Yeah, it must be quarterly. I agree with him fully. And you from the Defence Committee would also agree with him fully. Yeah, the report to Parliament must include the names of the board members and the synopsis of their qualifications. Under this part of it. Thank you. Can we continue then?
Thank you, Chair. Then subsection 13. A person is disqualified from being a member if he or she is A, not a citizen of the Republic, B, an unrehabilitated insolvent, C, declared to be of unsound mind by a court, or D, convicted of offence and sentenced to more than 12 months imprisonment without option of a fine, either in the Republic or outside the Republic, if the conduct constituting the offence would have been an offence in the Republic?
the minister may, after due inquiry, remove a member from office on account of A, misconduct, B, incapacity, C, incompetence, D, conflict of interest, or E, unethical conduct.
And then, after 14, put in 15, that the minister must inform Parliament about the board, and also after removal of members from the board and reappointments. Ms. Kulwa.
I'm most uncomfortable suggesting that a person who's been sentenced to a year in prison can now become the head of it. It says, as convicted to an offence sentenced to more than 12 months. So if they've served a year in prison, that's fine. Then they can become a member. I mean, really, how are we allowing someone who's been convicted of an offence to be involved with us at all? Is that not just a recipe for disaster? Certainly we've seen enough of that of late.
You can just be convicted of an offence and sentenced to imprisonment without the option of a fine. Take out the 12 months.
Again, Chair, as you recall, we had one of the provincial police commissioners here recently who said he has a huge problem because he has one, he referred to a single case, he has many, of a person who nearly beat someone to death, was given a 50,000 rand fine, paid them in cash, and there we go, still with a gun on his hip in a station near you. So, how is this helping? I don't know. It's just, it's too light.
Just in the school of one.
Anyone convicted on offence. Punish.
Is the department that your logic around putting it the way it was then?
Chair, I would actually agree with the chairperson on the recommendation that we take out the words more than 12 months because it really would be, I think the differentiation would really come in if you receive imprisonment without the option of any fine. That would really make the differentiation also with traffic fines and all that. Maybe my colleagues can help in this regard as well, but I would be in favour of making the change that the chairperson has suggested.
It is not simple to say that anyone with a criminal record cannot be considered for a position on this board.
To refer to your traffic fine, say that's not a criminal record. What is the definition of a criminal record?
I think what the chair has in mind is that a person whose fingerprints has actually been on record that the person has committed a crime.
Yes.
Chair, once the person has gone through the court system, been convicted, and the criminal records will be indicating to the extent on the SAP 69, if I'm correct. The person is convicted of a particular offence and that would be stated there as the record, official record.
Addressing the point that the Obokula Bonas is right, would that include road offences or not?
If a person is convicted of an offence, it will be on the criminal record, Chair. Any offence, if it was a traffic offence, if it's an offence, it will be on the record as far as I know.
Yeah, I think in the case of where, for example, an accident that led to the death of a person, etc., fingerprints would be taken. But not for any other normal traffic offence, speeding offence, and that won't be included on the criminal database.
Is that correct?
The chairperson may have to verify this. My understanding is that when a person is convicted, 69 are sent in. The state law is better, correct, but I may have to verify given what General Jacobs is saying now.
Chairperson, I don't want to confess I have maybe contravened the speed limit at some time, but definitely, I know your fingerprints are not taken for an ordinary speeding fine.
Chair, and just on another point in respect of appointment of board members and eligibility of board members. I think one of the ideas was, or the reason intention why it was crafted in this manner, is to have some sort of leniency with regard to some offences, and that the minister would consider those as options, not options, but as a guide to the minister as to what type of offence. In respect of convicted offence of not more than 12 months would be one of the considerations that the minister will take into account when making the appointment. So it's basically, it is a guide to the minister with regard to convictions of crimes for the member concerned.
I must be honest that I'm also uncomfortable that we're allowing that, because under Schedule 1 offences you can get a 6-month imprisonment. So the person can actually be guilty of a serious crime. So I would prefer if you can check in terms of the criminal record that we simply say no person with a criminal record. This is an ethics board. If the word ethics wasn't there, we could still argue about things, but this is an ethics board. And we've got to be clear about what type of people we want them. They're also going to provide policy guidelines in future, etc. So...
I agree with you. We can propose that person. Why do they have to look for it?
No, we agree with criminal things, but then it's check if there is any problem. For instance, because somehow the statewide advisor and Mr. Commissioner Jacobs have some slight different ideas of what might be on the criminal records or not. So we don't want a guy with a parking offence or a speed offence. And we want to make sure even the guy that appears in court because of a speeding offence, that he's not disqualified. And that's basically what we want to do. Check for us that. But we agree in principle. The principle is there. No criminal record.
Chair, just to point out that provision is with regard to, we took it in the constitution with regard to qualification for membership of the National Assembly.
We know that people with, if you've got, and we're very well aware of what you say. Very aware. We're very aware. And I can see that you've got them placed, because the next line clearly indicates where it says, after due inquiry, remove a member from an office on account of, from the board on account of, and the person from the board. And the members even in capital letters. No, it's not capital letters, but the fact of the matter is not. The minister may, after due inquiry, remove a person from the board on account of.
What you say, Chair, is actually a common phrase, a member of the board.
Yeah, but it's a member of office, member, and it's not an office. Remove a person from the board on account of. Yeah, remove a person from the board on account of. Sorry, can you also add, if the minister may, after due inquiry, remove a person from the board on account of receiving a criminal record? Because he might not have a criminal record when he enters the board, hello, such, but he might acquire a criminal record once he is a member of the board. Make sure. Sorry?
On the conviction of offence. On the conviction of an offence.
That's fine. That's the Constitution. You can suspend. Are you making provision for suspension of members of the board pending inquiry? Should we not?
I think it would probably be wise to rather put it in.
Okay. Nadia wants us to dismiss them when they get arrested for murder, but you can't really necessarily do that. So suspend them for that time. Yeah. So we must make provision for suspension. So something else that I want to know, and again here Ms. Ndlovu will back what I'm saying. No, because of your experience in the things. The non-attendance of meetings should also lead to disqualification of members. Or removal of members. One of the biggest challenges that we have with boards is non-attendance of meetings.
We don't have to go into the details.
It can be the chairperson can request the minister or whatever, but yeah, you can do it through regulations. But just that make it a provision, non-attendance of meetings. Is there anything else on this before we move on to functions? Happy, continue please.
Chair, the functions of the board, 15W1, the board must A, monitor the implementation of this chapter, B, make proposals to the minister, 1, on improvement of practices regarding the overall operations of the NFDD, 2, the ethical, legal and social implications of the use of forensic DNA, and 3, on the training and development of criteria for the use of manual searches. That is one that we've inserted, Chair. C, provide oversight over the processes relating to 1, the collection, destruction, disposal, retention and storage of DNA samples, 2, the retention and expungement of DNA profiles as provided for in this Act, 3, familial searches, 4, security breaches, and 5, security management systems. That is the one that we have copied from the, or drawn through from the executing measures for the National Commissioner. D, handle complaints by 1, receiving and assessing complaints about alleged AA violations related to the abuse of DNA samples and profiles, B, security breaches and reporting to complainants in respect thereof, 2, gathering such information which will assist the board in discharging its duties and carrying out its functions under the section, attempting to resolve complaints by means of dispute resolution mechanisms such as mediation and conciliation, 4, referring complaints to relevant authorities where applicable, or 5, reporting to the minister the outcome of every complaint, and E, consider all reports submitted to it in terms of this chapter.
And what do you do with this? Can I just ask, if you look at C, should we not have a cut all? We might not be thinking about everything at this point in time. Just have a cut all or any other matter related to the Act. Put it in a Roman 6. And anybody else? Ms. Kulavana?
Yeah, speaking as someone in a union, what happens if a member of this unit is accused of doing something nefarious and accused in a disciplinary hearing? Where do they go to appeal? I understand it then may become, I presume you have certain areas which are criminal matters which will then be dealt with by SIPs and they face 15 years, that's the selling or whatever, but there are other matters where they may be accused of something. Where is their appeal process?
I don't understand why it's got anything to do with board at this point in time. I'm trying to understand why you're writing it here.
Because it says a D. They handle complaints and assess complaints about violations relating to the abuse of DNA samples. So if they take a decision, yeah, it was absolutely Annelies van Wyk showed someone something or told someone something, and they determine your guilt. The board, where do you go?
The disciplinary processes will still be a sub-process, and that's why we make provision for it earlier in the bill around that, if I remember correctly, that SAS themselves will institute a disciplinary process and will report back to the board. So that this, we're not touching the disciplinary part of it, if I'm correct.
Yeah,
Yes, Jane, I might add that there is an appeal process within the disciplinary process.
If they receive a complaint, do they then just hand it straight on to SAS?
They can assess the complaint. They can gather the necessary information. And they can say, yes, this person has been justified to complain about this. And then they can say, one, we believe it must go to SAPS for criminal investigation. Or B, we believe it must go to the public protector. Or C, we believe it must go to the Human Rights Commission. Or D, SAPS must institute disciplinary actions against that person. If I'm understanding it correctly.
The problem is, if I'm asking and you're saying, if you understand it correctly, perhaps it needs clarification.
No, it's very clear. I understand it. I just want them to tell me whether I'm wrong or not. Clear about it. The Act is quite clear that when, if you look earlier in the Act, where we talk about bridges, etc., disclosure, that there must be certain steps taken, that it's an internal police process. But this board also has the right, because it handles complaints, to refer issues for disciplinary hearings or to institute a criminal investigation or an investigation by the Human Rights Commission or Public Protector or whoever else. They might even want to get the Auditor General at some point involved, because they believe the money that's been rolled out for the implementation of this plan is aiming at somebody's beach house. So as much as I desire one, she also desires one. Have one. Categorically. Sorry, just the other thing, Nadia's solution, just reminding, is quite correct. We said yesterday that it was not only security breaches, it must be communication breaches, etc., all breaches. I'm referring to free, home and free. Oh, sorry, four. C4,
thank you, we've captured it.
You've captured it, okay.
Chair, if we get to subsection 2, Chair, you will remember that the committee decided that we must actually duplicate the Roman 2, gathering such information which will assist the board in discharging its duties under this section that relates to the complaints. But we have inserted sub 2 to read, the board may gather such information which will assist it in discharging its duties and carrying out its functions under this chapter. So it's exactly the same wording but reflecting to the broader activities of the board. Sub 3, a copy of the report contemplated in section 15V5 must be submitted to the National Commissioner to follow up and address the issues contained therein. For the board may establish, it should read, may establish committees to deal with specific matters as and I know that it was said that we must send it to subcommittee, but there is no committee, so we thought it's better to refer to committees that can be established, because it's the board and then committees.
The review of applications for early expansion, it's not there. Another one that I'm missing is... I just want to check, because I'm trying to check yesterday's notes for complaints there. The Commissioner's report function. Because we said yesterday, 3 is fine. Must be submitted to the National Commission, and then we said we want the board, the Commissioner must report back to the board what was done about.
Remarks.
3 months, made it clear.
No, 15-7, page 50.
The chair, I did refer the committee to that incision, which was requested there. It's in grey, paragraph 7.
Tell me 15 YT is what? That's what I'm asking.
If the disciplinary proceedings are not instituted and finalized within the periods referred to in subsections you want to do, it would not invalidate proceedings there.
15 YT. So why are we referring that the Commission must report to the Board in 90 days of receipt of the report contemplated at 15Y3, the steps taken to rectify the issues contained there?
Well, that must be a reference to the power of the Board to or the function of the Board to submit a copy of their report to the National Commission. So I agree that 15Y3 is incorrect.
What's the correct one?
I referred to 15W3, the cross-referencing changed because of moving.
We see the cross-reference of the referencing must be correct. With where you guys put it. I really am uncomfortable. And I understand your legal things around it, but we said we're trying to write easy and understandable communication, legislation. Now, you can't even get your own references right. Now, if you get to this section, you've got to refer back to the different section. Why can't we simply say in the section under the board that the commissioner must report back to the to the board within 90 days. Why can't we just put it under the board? That's where we asked you to put it in the first place.
We'll make the change.
But it should have been made already. That's the frustrating part of it. I thought it would help if they meet in your office yesterday, Stacey, otherwise I see it didn't help. Can we continue, please?
Chair, that's on page 58, procedure for handling of complaints. 15X1, the board may, either as a result of a complaint lodged with it or of its own accord, consider a complaint. 2, the board must refer a complaint contemplated in subsection 1 to a committee of the board for assessment in prescribed manner. 3, the committee must, after its assessment of the complaint, report to the board on the outcome of such assessment, including recommendations relating thereto. 4, in the case where a criminal act is alleged to have been committed by a person subject to an assessment, the board must refer the matter to the relevant authorities for further action. 5, the board must ensure that recommendations regarding disciplinary matters are referred to A, the National Commissioner, B, the Executive Director of the Independent Police Investigative Director, or C, any other relevant authority. 6, the relevant authority referred to in subsection 4 must report the outcome of such further action to the board.
not only relevant authorities, must be four and five.
Okay.
We can't say that, we can't, and that's what frustrates me. Why do we want to oblige, which is correct, the public protector, criminal investigation, the Human Rights Commission, whoever else, Auditor General, but we don't want to comply SAS. And I put report back to the board on the steps that they've taken. Can't do that. I'm sorry. The relevant authority refers to such section 4 and 5 must report the outcome of such further actions to the board. We just go back to page 57 as well. We said yesterday as well that security and quality management systems, quality is still not in there. 57, Roman 5. The first Roman 5, at the top of the page. Security and quality management systems. Not only, yeah, and quality management systems. I don't think we can simply put in 5 and the 6 because they're not relevant authority. I think it should read the 11th relevant authority referred to in subsection 4 and the National Commissioner of IFPT of SAPS and the Executive Director of IFPT must report the outcome of such further action to the board, but you can sort out the wording. The principle is it. Continue, please.
Thank you, Chair. Disciplinary recommendations 15Y on the National Commissioner and the Executive Director must, with regard to recommendations on disciplinary matters, refer to him or her in terms of section 15A4A. Within 30 days of receipt thereof, initiate disciplinary proceedings in terms of the recommendations made by the board, and D, immediately on finalization of the disciplinary matter, inform the minister in writing of the outcome thereof and provide a copy thereof to the board. Two, the National Commissioner or the Executive Director must finalize disciplinary proceedings relating to DNA within 60 days from the initiation thereof and must report to the board and the minister the reasons on for not finalizing the proceedings within that period. Three, if the disciplinary proceedings are not instituted and finalized in the periods referred to in subsections 1 and 2, it would not invalidate the proceedings. Chair, you can just be deleted, Chair.
Can I hear you on this? If the right reference is in here now, I'm not going to go back and check. What is 15AA?
That relates to the regulations. I'm not making excuses. It was as a result of the change of the sequence here. It will be rectified.
Need to be corrected when we get back. Continue, please. Is there anything else under here? Next section, please.
Parliamentary Oversight Chair 15Z. 1. The National Commissioner must provide, as part of the annual report of service to Parliament, a report A, in respect of the performance of the NPD, B, the use of forensic DNA evidence in the investigation of crime, and C, relating to disciplinary proceedings concerning forensic DNA matters. 2. The minister must, not later than 5 years after the commencement of this chapter, submit a report to the relevant parliamentary committee on whether any legislative amendments are required to improve the functioning of the NFDB and the use of forensic DNA evidence in the combating of crime. Three, after the initial period of 5 years referred to in subsection 2, the minister must every 3 years submit a report referred to in subsection 2 to Parliament. Four, the executive director of the Independent Police Investigative Directorate must submit a report as part of the directorate's annual report to the relevant parliamentary committee on the performance of the functions of the Independent Police Investigative Directorate in terms of this chapter, including disciplinary proceedings concerning forensic DNA matters. Five, the board must annually submit a report to the relevant parliamentary committee on its function in terms of this chapter.
You know, this legislation and this bill actually falls under justice. We're doing an amendment, but they should actually be sitting here with the Criminal Law Forensic Procedures Amendment Bill is actually, as I recall, their bill. And Justice was quite missy that they were not dealing with it from the start. So when we say the relevant portfolio committee, should we not be saying the police portfolio committee? Otherwise, it's going to head off to them, I think.
We're talking here about the SAPS bill, because we're now in the SAPS part of the bill. So this is now speaking to the SAPS bill. But it should be the National Assembly. We've made it clear yesterday as well, because this is not a bill that our counterparts in the NCOP, this bill is not going to the NCOP. Thank God it's not going to the NCOP. The board has annually submitted a report to the Rayland, to the National Assembly. It's NA, we said yesterday. We said all things must refer to NA. I think the parliamentary lawyer has to make the point. It's National Assembly. Is it not? Why did you change your mind?
I just want to make a point of the portfolio committee, but National Assembly would be the big house, and I thought the report would come to the committee.
No report comes to this committee directly. It tables to the Speaker's office and then gets referred to the committee. Members, are there anything else in this? Can I just say that, please, if you look through it, when we talk about legislative reports that must come, it must come to the National Assembly. When we talk about part of the annual report, it is the Parliament. Part of the annual report, then it's Parliament. Because the annual report also goes to the NCOP. Whether they decide to deal with the section or not is neither here nor there. There's one annual report. I want the parliamentary law advisor to look at this specifically and inform them by tomorrow morning where what should be in this section so that we don't leave it to the technical team. Parliament must advise on these issues. So, and that must be done by tomorrow, please, so that when we get back on Tuesday we have the clarity on all of this. I'm also worried
That again, okay, it's there. Let's carry on. Regulations.
Thank you, Chair. 15A81. The Minister must make regulations regarding all matters which are reasonably necessary or expedient to be provided for.
Okay, where was regulations previous on the previous page? At the bottom of 51 on the previous draft, I just want to copy our comments from there with what we're saying now. Continue.
I said, one, the Minister may make regulations regarding all, must make regulations regarding all matters which are reasonably necessary or expedient to be provided for and which must be followed by all police officials or members of the Independent Police, of Independent Police Investigative Directorate, referred to in the Independent Police Investigative Directorate Act, in order to achieve the objects of this chapter, including the following. A, the manner in which to secure a crime scene for the purposes of collecting crime scene samples. B, the manner in which to safely preserve and ensure timely transfer of collected samples to the forensic science laboratories. C, the manner in which to request access to information stored on the NFDD. D, the manner in which DNA samples must be destroyed. E, the manner in which complaints must be lodged to and assessed by the board. F, the application process for access to the DNA profile and crime scene sample for exoneration purposes. G, the process to be followed by the Minister in the appointment of members of the board. H, the process to be followed with regard to destruction of forensic DNA samples and expungement of profiles derived therefrom. I, the requirements for the taking of bottle samples in a designated area. And J, the development of strict protocols and training relating to familial searches.
This is the must. What worries me is the requirements for taking of buccal samples in a designated area. Does that cover the requirements for a designated area? Because that's the thing that we raised yesterday. You will remember somewhere in the bill we say the Minister must determine the requirements for a designated area, then the National Commissioner and the Commissioner of, and the courts must make available such areas. I'm just asking, if you tell me it's that, I'm happy. I'm not sure it does.
I think maybe we misunderstood that, but I agree we can change it to make sure that the requirements is actually set by the Minister and then followed by the DGs.
I think it's the requirements that you've got in here is not around, the way it's worded here is speaking to the requirement for taking a buccal sample. It's not speaking to the requirement of the designated area. And that's what we said them as we hear about.
Chair, just something that came to mind, I'd quite forgotten. When we were initially talking about the taking of buccal samples, there was the suggestion that people could take their own or be offered the option, or a certain type of person could be offered the option. I don't know if that's in anywhere. It is in there. Okay. I just suddenly jumped into my head. I thought, talk quickly.
We dealt with it yesterday. It's there in detail there. And it's basically anybody can take their own sample if they want to. They don't want to be so. So can we continue? Is there anything else that's here? Honourable Glover, earlier in the bill, we say that the Minister must determine the standards or whatever, I can't remember the exact wording, around the designated areas, how it should look. In other words, it must be private, etc., etc. Now, the way the regulation is drafted, it's more speaking to the process of taking buccal samples rather than the area itself. And I'm just saying they must just correct that so that it speaks to the requirements of the area.
To chair, continue.
Can I just ask if there anything else that members of feeling we must under the must? Which one is speaking to expungement? Just show me again. Yes, correct. That would include your bargains. It would include all of those.
Correct, yes. Okay.
Why are we using expungement here and not removal? No, I'm just asking, the destruction is one thing. The destruction is the actual sample. I'm just worried about confusion around expungement. But if you're happy with expungement, I'm happy with it. I just want to find out. It is not the removal of profiles.
Yeah, I think we need to interrogate it because there's also other forms, not expungement, but for example, the process through the president, where the president...
But that's exactly what's confusing, because the expungement speaks to pardoning specifically, and whether it won't be more correct to put here the removal of. But, I mean, look at it for us, please. Can you please?
Subsection 2, Chair, the Minister may make regulations regarding A, any matter which is required or permitted by this chapter to be prescribed, and B, any administrative or procedural matter necessary or expedient to give effect to the provisions of this chapter. 3, a regulation made under subsection 1 may prescribe a fine or a period of imprisonment for a maximum of 5 years for any contravention thereof or failure to comply therewith. 4, the regulations contemplated in subsection 1 must be tabled in Parliament within 6 months after the commencement of this chapter.
Can I hear you? Satisfied? 4, the regulations contemplated in subsection 1 must be tabled to Parliament within 6 months of the commencement of the chapter for notification.
Thank you, Chair. If I can continue with transitional arrangements. 8.1, okay, we have inserted here the two definitions that the committee required us to define. For the purpose of this section, casework index means the index containing the forensic DNA profiles derived from crime scene samples collected before the commencement of this act, and reference index means the index containing the forensic DNA profiles derived from bodily samples of, and I think the A must be removed, Chair, of victims, then insert A suspect, A convicted offender. We'll just align that, taking out that it fits correctly, Chair. Person who has consented to provide a sample. E, contractor or supplier of reagents or equipment to the forensic DNA laboratory. F, personnel employed at the forensic DNA laboratory. And G, visitors to the forensic DNA laboratory taken before the commencement of this act.
Sorry, A, you say, must be removed. Reference index in terms of victims.
Notice that we have the, it's just the A doesn't fit in everywhere, so you'll just get to a formulation that...
wanted to remove victims as a category. Are we happy with that, members? I don't know, we cannot be because we don't know what the definition is. Continue, please.
Thank you, Chair. Then we've inserted a definition of this act. Means the Criminal Law Forensic Procedure Amendment Act 2015, and that is just catered for the transitional provisions. 2, comparative searches between forensic DNA profiles may be conducted using the repository categorized into a casework index and the reference index. 3, the forensic DNA profiles which were administered and maintained before this act came into operation must be maintained by the authorized officer until the system solution to support the NFDD is operational, which must be within 4 years from the date of coming into operation of this act. 4, the forensic DNA profiles contained in the casework index and the reference index must be transferred to the NFDD within 3 months of the system solution referred to in subsection 3 being operational. 5, the period of 4 years referred to in subsection 2 may be extended by the Minister on the request of the National Commissioner or of his or her own accord and after approval by the National Assembly. 6. The National Commissioner must report quarterly in writing to the Reverend. We will just rectify that, Chair, as well, with, in consultation with the Parliamentary Law Advisor, Parliamentary Committee and the Board on the progress made in the acquisition of the system solution to support the NFDD until it is fully operational. 7. The National Commission of the South African Police Service must, with the assistance of the, just instead of the National Commissioner of Correctional Services, from the date of commencement of this section, ensure that the buckle sample is taken within 2 years of any person serving a sentence of imprisonment in respect of any offence listed in Schedule 8 of the Criminal Procedure Act. Before the release of the person, if the buckle sample had not already been taken upon his or her arrest, or B, was released before their sentence is completed either on parole or under correctional supervision by a court. 8. The National Commissioner of Correctional Services must, from the date of commencement of this Act, provide the National Commissioner of the South African Police Service with the list of offenders who are serving a sentence in respect of any offence listed in Schedule 8 and have been released on parole or under correctional supervision. Chair, I think we might need to just go back to the previous section and see whether there might be any overlap with this. I think when we changed the previous section there, something might have been left in here. When we dealt with the subsection 7, Chair, there might be some overlap if we look at the issue about the serving of parole or correctional supervision. We'll just make sure, Chair. In mind, for the purposes of subsection 7, a buckle sample must be taken by an authorized person who is a police official. 10, the National Forensic Oversight and Ethics Board must convene its first meeting within 30 days of the board being constituted. 11, I think that was one of the questions that was put in the discussion, Chair. The expungement of the forensic DNA profiles in the casework index and reference index must be performed within 1 year after the system solution to support the operation of the NFDD has been established. And 12, the Director General of the Department of Justice and Constitutional Development must, on a monthly basis, provide the National Commissioner of the South African Police Service with an updated list of all persons that were ordered to be entered on the National Register for Sexual Offenders until the system referred to in subsection 11 comes into operation. Chair, the last one is really a practical issue, because a person who's on that sexual list of sexual offenders, that is one of the criteria for determining on whether a buckle sample must be taken or may be taken.
Can we look at this? Can I see hands? I must say it's improved from yesterday's session. Took some shouting, it appears, from my side, but it's an improvement. I don't think there's a problem between 7 and 8, because I think 7 covers what happens from the point, the time that the Act is passed, going forward. I'm just talking about what is happening now, as we are speaking, so I don't think there's a problem there. But I do find it interesting that the 4 years is now already 4 years and 3 months. Mm-hmm. 4. The forensic DNA profiles contained in the casework index and the reference index must be transferred to the NFDD within 3 months of the system solution referred to in subsection 3 being operational. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's 4 years, but they give themselves another 3 months now to move it over to that system. Hmm? No, the point is, when we said, when will this thing be fully operational? We were told 4 years. Fully operational. It's fine, I'm not arguing the point. We'll give you the 3 months. Then if you go to the next one, it becomes 5 years now. The expungement of the forensic is paid 64.11. The expansion of forensic DNA profiles and casework index and reference index must be performed within 1 year after the system solution to support operation
of the NFDDS studies. Now we're giving ourselves 5 years already. It's not fully operational if it's not done. That's the point. But it's fine. We're not going to argue with you. No, the fact of the matter is, members have asked, when will this thing be fully operational? Fully operational means everything is on one system. And we were told 4 years. Now it's 4 years and 3 months. That's another 1 year for this, so it becomes 5 years already. I'm going to argue with you. The fact of the matter is, fully operational means we're working from one system. That's what it means. Members, is there anything that we're missing here? I don't think it's worth arguing about the 3 months. I don't think it's worth arguing about the 1 year. I just want to put it on record that we have not missed it. Honourable Mulabati.
Yes, Chairman. Just a small one. On 8E. 8E. Contractor or supplier of reagents is re-agents. Thanks, Chair.
Can I just ask that if you look at the period of 4 years referred to in subsection 3, not 2. And the point, the period of 4 years referred to in subsection 3, not subsection 2. Can't be used with this, not taking DNA from remand detainees. Is that what you want? You want to take DNA from remand detainees, yes or no?
To populate the database, and before, after they've been arrested, that is the aim of the Act. And we have changed the Act as well to make provision that once a person is arrested before he's taken to court, we can. So the remand detainees that are in the system when the Act kicks in must be addressed.
The transitional arrangement is not addressed. That's the concern we have. You speak about parolees, you speak about correctional supervision, but you do not speak about them. Nadia?
I think the problem is under 7, and if you read, it's just been up there for a whole time, and I think Chairperson keeps on trying to explain why the problem. If you read it, it says the National Commission of SAT must, with the assistance of the National Commission of Critical Services, ensure that a buckle sample is taken within 2 years of any person serving a sentence of imprisonment in respect of any offence. Now, a person that is serving a sentence of imprisonment sentenced to imprisonment, they're serving a sentence, they're in jail and they're serving a sentence. A remand detainee is waiting for his trial. He's not serving a sentence of imprisonment, he's waiting to be sentenced so that he can be served his sentence of imprisonment. So by writing it this way, and not including them anywhere else, you are excluding all the your ability to take the samples from the remand detainees. So you have to take out serving a sentence of imprisonment, and you have to say a sample taken with 2 years of any offender or remand detainee within a correctional center or remand detention center who is in there, whatever, in respect of any offense. You know, you can't have the word serving a sentence of imprisonment.
If I could make a recommendation there is to keep these two issues separately. I would rather have a separate subsection to address the remand detainees.
And we now finally have that subsection because we've been asking for it on a daily basis.
Yeah.
issue. This is just to cover, I mean, it's really almost an interim issue, because just to cover those ones, because after this, they will be taken at the SAS station anyway. So I don't know.
It must be there. It must be here, because otherwise you're not going to have the right to take there. And secondly, if you look at 9, for the purposes of Section 7, and you're not going to get away with it because we had this long argument and Commissioner Shesu was really not happy with me yesterday about this, and 8, a back example must be taken by an author who is a person who is a police official.
I was happy about the police officer. I was not happy about the fact that the correction was not assisted. That's what the police officer said, and so we agree what is omitted by the state was the remand can actually be included now.
This stage, I don't believe in mistakes anymore. Especially not after the heated argument of yesterday. For the purposes of subsection 7 and 8, a battle sample must be taken by an authorized Westerners police official. In fact, Commissioner Shelley, we said to you, the Commissioner of Correctional Services must provide you with that list and assist you, but SAPS must take the responsibility of getting that sample. That's what we said. And now it disappears again. It's fine. It's a mistake. Let's carry on. Is it 7 and 8? Commissioner Jacobs.
Thank you, Chair. If we can go to the repeal of laws, subsection 9, subclause 9. Chair, we have already dealt with that part in the previous discussion. There's been no further amendment to that. Chair, then we have the objective memorandum as a separate document. It was just in terms of the time frames that we copied it after the main document. I don't know whether the committee want to go through it now or after we have made all the amendments to the bill, Chair. We have aligned it with as the bill is before we had this discussion. But I must also say, Chair, that the objective of the memorandum is very wide, so it's not really going into that much detail of the aspect context of the bill.
5. I'm just pacing to page 4. 5. This is not going to apply in no world. Page 4, number 5. And I'm surprised that the sector advisors allow it to be like that. It's got to speak to the financial implications. It's got to reflect the financial cost. What you're doing here now is you want to say, the parliamentary committee said, it's fine, it's okay, so let it go ahead. And then from there on onwards, you just blame the parliamentary committee. It's not going to fly, I'm sorry. Put it this way, you can also add the sentence to say the parliamentary portfolio committee on police was totally dissatisfied with the outcome of meetings. Because then it reflects the truth. Otherwise, it's not reflecting the truth.
I must say, and it was not put in now, it was, I think, already in the previous draft, although we didn't discuss it yet. But I think, Jay, the issue about the implications is also an issue that is still hanging because the committee is still awaiting the final outcome of it. So, Jay, what I want to say, I think I appreciate any assistance from the committee in terms of how we must phrase it.
Well, definitely not this way. This time must be made quite clear because it hasn't been costed. That's the reality. If it was, then we would have had a final cost. We're still waiting for that cost. And I mean, I just think this is totally not reflecting the truth. And over and above not reflecting the truth, it's putting the obligation on this committee, which I don't think is fair. In fact, Special advisors, I want some advice on this issue because as far as I know, this is what also informs Treasury around issues.
Thank you, Chair. With any bill that comes before Parliament, the relevant department who introduces the bill have to give account on the cost. Initially, when the bill was introduced, we didn't have the cost issue explained. And I think what was inserted here for discussion with the committee was not actually discussed with us for that matter. So we can't give an account as to what's before the committee at this stage. But at this morning's meeting, we did indicate that we will not include the memorandum of the objects on the bill because we want the bill to be finalized first, and then we will go through the memorandum on the objects of the bill. But we take note of the concerns of the committee in that regard, but we did not agree on what's before, what's stated under paragraph 5 for the implications for the state on this particular bill. But of course it has implications for treasury, and that's why it is there. But we can't give to the extent of it, we can't say that we agree to that, because we have not discussed it with SAS.
Can't agree to it because there's no amount to it in any case. The fact of the matter is I want to know the principle. The principle is it should give a monetary value. Am I correct? It must have a monetary value. And if it's not further, if it says over the first 10 years it would be that, and thereafter it would be more or less so much until implementation. I remember that from the Firearms Control Act, where we had to make provision for the years following that as well.
Yeah, I think maybe the implementation plan, maybe you can inform that as well, the breakdown of that particular cost. And then the committee will also, you know, have clarity in respect of the way forward as well. So in a phasing approach with regards to cost, I think that will inform. So when SAPS comes back with the information, we can also take that, include that in the memorandum for reprint when the bill is adopted by the committee. Thank you, Chair.
I'm stating it now again to SAPS and to the stakeholder advisors that we will not adopt this bill. I want to make quite clear before we are satisfied also with the memorandum, specifically the Section 5 in terms of the financial costs. We're not going to put our names to something that we don't know what the cost of is. It can't be expected that it will be from our side. We will fail in our duty if we do that. So we've given the department time. It will be the third time that they come back. So, Honourable Mbube, you raised your hand.
I was going to support you, Jefferson. The memorandum summarized the bill, and it gave the costing of the bill. Therefore, we can't do with the memorandum, and we can't do anything about it. And we can't even go to the agreeing on the bill without financial financial implication of it. And we must know. That's the problem we are facing. I think the directive that we are giving should be the last directive. If they fail to give us on Tuesday, that means they are postponing the agreement of this bill again. They are doing it. It's not us. We are ready to do it. We've been sitting here while others are looking over the mountains, whatever, and we have been sitting here hours and hours trying to catch up on time, but now we can't do it without financial implications, because at the end of the day, you see, our problem is that when we go to our caucuses, let me just make an example, when we go to our caucuses, we talk about the bill itself, the implication of the bill, but at the end of the day, how much will it cost? That's the question. They may not take care of them who is going to run what, but how much will it cost? Have you budgeted for that? Has the money there? Can it be implemented? If it can't be implemented, why actually? Those are the questions that come from the caucus. Now, if you can't have that chairperson, then we are stuck. That is my point of view. Chair, thank you.
Chair, I was labouring under the misapprehension that they had until Friday, as in tomorrow, to give us the financials. Bearing in mind that they've been here twice and got turfed out by us, I would have thought by now they'd worked out the costings. So if we're only going to get some, and even then when we get it, we might be as dissatisfied as we were the first two times we turfed him out. So
So I'm in a position where, you know, I'm just locked at it. So until you have financials, don't even come here and try and present it to the caucus. So it's a problem.
If you would allow me to chair the meeting, I would actually do so. The fact of the matter is that, as I explained earlier, we were supposed to draft questions. Because of the committee's schedule, we couldn't meet before yesterday to do so. We did that because we were meeting a bit later yesterday, 10 o'clock. We then sat and drafted the questions. It was sent to them, and in fairness of them only receiving the questions yesterday, I then extended the time for them to respond. And that's why I said this morning, we will take a decision on the voting. Now, clearly from what we've gone through, we haven't even gone back to the first 39 pages where we know there are some changes, even though it's minor changes. It is clear that we can't vote on the bill next week. Clear. And what we will do next week, but I am going to ask the department to come up with a clean bill next week. Two things. You will still have to have a version like it is now, so that we can actually address the changes that we talked about today, and that we can go to the first 39 pages that we dealt with yesterday as well. I will then request you only to go to those, so we don't have to go through it like we did today as much detail. The parliamentary law advisor has come back to you by tomorrow so that you can align this. Look at it because parliamentary law advisor, as far as I can see, in some places it will be parliament and other places it will be the portfolio committee. So you've got to differentiate directly where it's what. I would then suggest, Mayors, that on Tuesday we have a meeting as is scheduled. We go through the bill for a last time in terms of the detail of the bill. We can even start going through it in terms of a clause-by-clause purpose. That's why I'm asking you also to have the legislation part of it ready, in bold form ready. We can go through it even clause-by-clause on Tuesday. We can even do the voting on the clause-by-clause. But we will not vote on the bill itself in its totality before the Tuesday thereafter, so once we have had the opportunity to look at the financial implications. Because it's only at that point in time that they would be able to finalize the memorandum and specifically Section 5. But I want to ask you to look at the rest of the memorandum in its totality with the exception of Section 5. So that even that we can deal with on Tuesday. So what we will do is we will do as much work as possible next week Tuesday. As much as possible. We will not vote on the total bill before we have seen the financial implications. Deadline for that. And I wanted to make it even next week, Friday, and then I was reminded that Friday is actually a public holiday. So we've made it on the Monday. And such now have absolutely, and Commissioner Shezi, I want to ask you, as the operational person here, to communicate this strongly to them. There's absolutely, absolutely no excuse that they can give us now for not having this. The questions are clear. Numbers that we want, the financial implications that we want is clear in there. It is not my problem and it's not this committee's problem. Yeah. If they, after they have had almost 3 months or a month, how long before the law, between the two meetings, it was almost 2 months. If they decide to meet the week before for the first time, it's not this committee's problem. It is not this committee's problem. And I'm sorry, this committee will not be irresponsible and pass something that we don't know what the financial implications are. Our commitment to this bill cannot be questioned by anybody. We've sat here day in, day out, going into it in detail. But our obligation is not only to pass pieces of legislation. Our obligation is also to look at the financial implications thereof. So please, if that message can be relayed very, very strongly to the people who are responsible for this. I also find it extremely worrisome to not see somebody from your finance section being involved in the costing of this book. That TSN comes and TSN explains, but there's nobody from finance who can tell us X, Y, or Z. I am also going to need this change that Tuesday's meeting, and that's why I want us to do as much as possible next week Tuesday, even if it means we vote on the clause-by-clause issue on this one, is that we ask that they be present, somebody from finance and PSN, on that Tuesday that we want to finally vote on the bill. If there are questions, then we can put the questions at that point in time, questions of clarity. Not this Tuesday, the next Tuesday. So they must hand in the answers, and that Tuesday they must be here. I don't think it's an unfair request. They don't have to be all of them seat on everybody, but at least your TRN person and somebody from the commissioner's section, if not himself. Members, are you satisfied with that arrangement?
Yes.
Then I want to thank the committee members. I want to thank state law advisors, secretariat, Commissioner Sherry, Commissioner Jacobs, parliamentary law advisor, for time. You're not done yet. You've got homework to do. Please make it easy on all of us. Let us Tuesday have something that is going to have no further problems. I will not allow members to raise new issues either. So. No, I'm saying new issues.
Can you just clarify, we are sitting Tuesday and Wednesday?
No, we're only sitting on Tuesday. Oh. Members, just Tuesday. Wednesday, there's a workshop for members on BRR reports. And the week thereafter, there's also a workshop, but you only have to attend one of those 4 days that are available. It's Tuesday, Wednesday next week, and Tuesday, Wednesday the week thereafter. Obviously, our members can't attend on Tuesday, so they'll have to attend on Wednesdays. We're only sitting members next week, Tuesday. Thank you very much. Meeting is adjourned.